I enjoy having breakfast in bed. I like waking up to the smell of bacon. Sue me. And since I don't have a butler, I have to do it myself. So most nights before I go to bed, I will lay 6 strips of bacon out on my George Foreman grill. Then I go to sleep. When I wake up, I plug in the grill. I go back to sleep again. Then I wake up to the smell of crackling bacon. It is delicious. It's good for me. It's a perfect way to start the day.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 27. Ethan and Weiss here with you once again. It's my flu game, a little under the weather, but that's not going to stop us. You guys know the drill. We got to do the housekeeping. So number one, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Guys, we're on iTunes. We're on Audio Boom. We are on the Google Play Store. So subscribe. You'll get fresh episodes to your phone when they drop. So make sure to do that. Two, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. And you can follow the blog at GothamSN for a bunch of other different New York sports podcasts. All your favorite teams, we got them. So go check it out. That does it for the housekeeping. Weiss, how are we living today?
How are you, Ethan?
I'm great.
Football spirit. Well, a little bit under the weather, but
yeah. Well, you know, can't do anything about it, and we're gonna power through. And we have a great episode on hand. Not only because we haven't done one in about a month, but because we were joined by a very special guest, Robert Thomas, defensive tackle for the New York Giants. That interview will be later in the episode, most likely after we tackle all of today's topics and answer your questions. So. Great interview. Can't thank Rob enough for coming on. He was awesome. Very friendly guy. Wish him all the best in competing for that starting defensive tackle job. You got any words before we get into it?
Let's do it.
All right. First up on the docket, the Eli Manning lawsuit, the memorabilia lawsuit from 2013 resurfacing. Shout out to the New York Post for being scummy as per usual. Eli was asked about it in today's offseason presser and was not very happy about it.
I will say that I've never done what I've been accused of doing. I have no reason, nor have I ever had any reason to do anything of that nature. I've done nothing wrong, and I have nothing to hide. And I know that when this is all done, everybody will see it the same way. That's one thing to write about my football or my play when you're attacking my integrity. Definitely makes me angry. You know, my track record of how I've handled myself since I've been here in New York since 2004 speaks for itself. I've tried to do everything with class and be a stand-up citizen, and that's what I have done, and that's getting attacked right now. I'm handling it. Now, obviously, this was first reported 3 years ago. I've been dealing with it for a long time, but just more angry than anything that having to deal with it.
It was probably the most angry we've ever seen Eli. It got to the point where he almost didn't use his indoor voice, which is crazy because we never really see any sort of emotion out of Eli. Weiss, let's get your thoughts on that first. And just the fact that the fact that it's coming back all the way from 2013, the fact that Eli's so angry about it and that he says there's nothing to hide, and let's just get into it.
Yes, it was quite the story it's been for Eli Manning the last couple of days. Obviously, if you guys aren't familiar with this whole lawsuit thing, it started a couple years ago. I'm not going to sit here and give you a rundown on it. I think the thing is just an absolute joke. I think the business is grimy and the people are grimy, and it's not a surprise that you see these type of lawsuits in the business. Look, I'm going to be straight with you guys, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a Giants fan, but even before hearing Eli Manning today, I was 110% on Eli Manning's side. Eli Manning, since coming to New York, hasn't heard a fly. There's a lot of flies in New York. He is class personified. He is a winner. He is someone that has made himself a lot of money. And there is absolutely no reason for him to do something like this. And it's disturbing from the stuff that I read about him, the stuff that people have said about him, because honestly, they're using this bogus story to tarnish his legacy, and they do it because that's what will get them ratings on their show. And I'll give you guys an example. I'm a huge Charles Barkley fan, and I know everyone has his opinions on him, and this is a little bit different, but people were using Charles Barkley's name to sort of gain ratings because of the comment he made about Celtics point guard Isaiah Thomas and the death of his sister, which is absolutely bogus. This is the same thing. This is all because it's Eli Manning's name linked to it. Nobody has done research about it. Nobody has looked this up. Everyone is just talking solely based on their personal feelings about Eli Manning. And I think that, you know, if people are smart and they actually look up and do research, and I know nowadays people don't really do that. They just, everyone is just so opinionated. They would see that this is bogus and that this, you know, really carries no merit. And I think, like Eli Manning said today, the truth come out. The truth will eventually come out about this. As far as Eli Manning's presser, I think it was awesome. I was a little bit scared that I thought that he would go into today and sort of just not talk about it at all. But for him to come out and be as, you know, firm and be as angry and just say the stuff that I had, that I had wished he was going to say, it is, proves me, my point even more, that I just think that he's 100% innocent on this. And I think that, you know, the people that are doing this to him, I hope they get what's coming to them. So I'll pass it on to you.
Definitely. No, I agree on all fronts. And it's weird, you know, if you're going to come out and pick a New York Giant to slander, why the guy with probably the cleanest record of anybody, not even on the team, in the entire NFL? You said it. Eli hasn't hurt a fly. He's never done anything illegal. And if Eli came out and was that upset about something and said into the microphone that this is, like, blatantly false, I've never done this, and these people are lying, I'm going to believe him, because he has earned the benefit of the doubt over his time in New York.
Yes, he has. 100%. And I think another thing is, when it comes to this whole thing, is the fact that he spoke so adamantly about it today, and the fact that he's actually fighting this,
yeah,
and not looking to just settle it and make it go away, kind of shows that, you know what, he knows that he's right, and he knows that, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes to prove his innocence. And, you know, that, like, you know, the truth will eventually come out, and I think this will get cleared, and you know, people will still talk about it because of their personal feelings about Eli Manning, but this is totally bogus. And, you know, I wanted to start off about this. We wanted to start off this right at the top because I think it needed to be said. We haven't talked about it at all publicly. I didn't really talk about it because I didn't want to put out tweets and then have people reply and then, you know, just go back and forth. I just wanted to make my statement about it and not have to worry about anybody, you know, replying back to me with some bogus, you know, remark. And another thing, Patriot fans need to stop with this comparison.
Oh, my God. Talk about an inferiority complex for the way the NFL treats them.
Look, not anything that happens has to do with Deflategate. Everything is different. Some things are just as bogus as Deflategate was. This is probably more bogus than Deflategate, just because Deflategate had some sort of, you know, I'm not going to say it was true, but, you know, there was some evidence to back it. Now, listen, I agree, Deflategate was totally bogus, and there's no proof that that nothing happened, but the fact that something small happens, and it's just like, oh, why don't they treat him like they treated Tom Brady? How come the Giants are not getting the treatment that the Patriots got? It's like, well, because everything is different, you know? Like, stop playing victim.
Yeah, you're right. Listen, that makes no sense for them to come out of the woodwork. And, you know, they're clowns. So speaking of clowns, let's talk Chris Christie for a little bit, because he is the biggest clown of them all.
And why does he go on WFAN?
Well, there was a rumor a little while ago that he was going to maybe be in the running to replace Mike Francesa when Francesa retired, which I can tell you firsthand is not going to happen. So that's out the window. He's polarizing. You know what? He embraces the sort of Skip Bayless role where he'll go on, he'll say outlandish shit so that people can get all worked up and angry. And honestly, we're probably playing into it a little bit right now. But there's just a few things that I need to get off my chest. One, Chris Christie is a clown, and Donald Trump made him his bitch over the last 12 months. So for him to even have any leg to stand on right now is ridiculous. Two, the fact that the governor of New Jersey will openly root against the Giants because, you know what, he's not only Donald Trump's bitch, he's Jerry Jones' bitch. So for him to be the governor of New Jersey, the state where the Giants play, and to root for the Cowboys and openly against the Giants, and then to come out and say that Eli Manning is a liar when he was probably the puppet for one of the biggest liars. Sorry if you're a Trump supporter. I am not. I don't care. I have no problem saying it. For him to come out and accuse Eli Manning of being a liar, I mean, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. This guy needs to shut up and go away forever.
Yeah, listen, if I were the Giants, I think that bridge will be burned between...
That was Chris funny. Christie, I gotcha.
Between Chris Christie and us, I wouldn't welcome him into our stadium. I don't know if they even do. It seems like he only shows up when they're playing the Cowboys.
And then he's in Jerry's box.
Yeah, so I just think, man, it's very unprofessional. I mean, especially to talk about it without having no real knowledge of the situation. I think it's like you said, it's very Skip Bayless-like just to sell ratings. But for a guy who's in a position that is he still the current governor, or is he a former governor?
I think he still is, technically, because... Trump didn't bring him into the administration, but I'm obviously not the person to ask about that.
Right, me neither. I don't live in New Jersey.
Yeah,
but yeah, I just think it's. I mean, like I said, this is what I talked about. People's opinion about this will come down to what their feelings about Eli Manning is. Chris Christie is an obnoxious Dallas Cowboys fan. So of course anything that happens with the Giants is going to come out and say something that's controversial and say something like this, but it's garbage. WFAN has really become garbage. I saw the report or the article, and I wrote a reply, and we need to stop giving people like that microphone. I mean, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a joke.
You're not gonna find me disagreeing there. Let's move on. Let's talk some actual football now. Let's talk John Hankins, Big Hank. No longer with the organization. He got his money. And listen, I think I don't think we owe anyone anything, but I don't even want to say we unfairly criticized his agent. I think the criticism was very fair. I don't think anybody thought that after waiting that long and demanding that much money that he was going to get the deal that he got from the Colts.
Exactly. I'm glad you think that, Lick, that, because I thought you were going to come on here and say we owe an agent an apology. We're kind of on this together. His agent didn't really do a great job handling this whole thing. And the Colts, they monitored the situation. They were in the market for a D tackle. And they came in and offered him close to $10 million a year. I mean, I know if the contract plays out and he gets the incentives, he'll get the $10 million annually, but it's only a three-year deal. The guaranteed dollars are not a lot. If you actually look at the breakdown of the contract, it could end up being only a two-year deal. As far as Hankins go, I'm happy for him. Hankins was a great, great person. I never heard anything bad about Hankins. He got his money. I'm happy for him. If you guys know me, you guys know I'm all about players getting paid. So, I have really nothing negative to say about Hankins. It sucks that he's gone, yeah, but, we'll see how the Giants replace him. Now, let me ask you. How do the Giants approach this situation about replacing Hankins, knowing their defensive line already? If you're the general manager, how do you look to fix? Do you panic and say, "Oh, I gotta go out there, I gotta, get a good replacement"? I mean, not a good replacement. You have to get a good replacement, but do I have to, use a first round pick? Do I have to go and try to make a trade? Or, be aggressive on any remaining free agents? How would you handle this if you were?
Or there's a few different options, and honestly, I think, listen, first of all, let me start by reiterating your sentiments. I have no issue with Hankins going out there, getting his money, getting that contract. NFL careers are short. I have no ill will towards him. Happy for him. In terms of replacing him, and let me give credit to, I believe, Ryan Smith, Pro Football Focus, who actually even reached out to me to let me know that he wrote this article. Hankins is coming off his worst season in 2016 with the addition of Damon Harrison. He posted a 47.1 overall grade, a 4.8 pass rush productivity, which is 38th among defensive tackles. Hankins is a nose tackle, right? Or if he's going to play in the 4-3, he's more suited to be a 1-tech than he is a 3-tech, which is what he was playing last year in Spag's system. So, and I hope I'm not naive in saying this, I don't think it'll be that hard to replicate the production that the Giants got out of Hankins last year. Now, in terms of how to replicate that, there are a few options. And I think, obviously, competition is the solution to many problems on many NFL rosters. So, right off the bat, we have the lovely Robert Thomas, who joined us later in this episode, and Jay Bromley already on the roster, ready to compete for that spot. You have free agent veterans. Someone like Jared Odrick could be brought in to compete for the job. You also have the draft. Defensive line depth overall is something that I think is, it should be a concern going into next season. I think Jerry Reese knows that. And I feel like, at least when I'm looking at all these mock drafts, and I should have one out this weekend or early next week, I feel like a lot of people are sort of shying away from drafting a defensive end in the first round because they just see, oh, we have JPP and Olivier Vernon. We need some pass rushing depth behind not only them, but in the interior. And Robert Thomas, who you'll listen to later, specializes in rushing the passer from the interior. He is good against the run, but he will say, and you can listen to his words, not mine, he's better at rushing the passer than he is at blocking the run. Jay Bromley coming out of Syracuse, I could be wrong, someone correct me, I believe he had like 8 or 9 sacks the year that the Giants drafted him. So they can get that complimentary pass rush out of two guys already on the roster. At the end of the day, though, I think depth is the key, and they're going to need to either draft someone in the first 3 rounds or bring in a veteran like Jared Odrick.
Yeah, I'm with you, too. I think Happy Frank, obviously, already said, replacing him is going to be interesting. They do have Jay Bromley, and they do have Robert Thomas. Jay Bromley is going into a contract year, and what better position than to go into a contract year having to earn your starting spot with already 3 Pro Bowl caliber defensive linemen,
right?
One who happens to be an All-Pro, and, you know, shine there. You know, obviously they're going to garner the attention and opens opportunities up for you to pad your stat sheet, to make plays. So obviously that's a big thing right there. Robert Thomas, a guy that the Giants like. I mean, they hung on to him, you know, for, what was it, 5 weeks when he was, quote-unquote, had an illness. He is a journeyman defensive lineman, but, you know, maybe he can shine. And, you know, you had the interview with him that's going to air later in the episode, and he talked about being able to rush the passer, and I think that's who the Giants need, a guy that can get to the quarterback, but also, you know, you want to be able to play the run. The draft. A couple of people I talked to about the draft, they say it is, you can get a good defensive lineman early, but in terms of talent, it's not really deep at the defensive tackle position.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see how that approach. Veterans, you talked about Jared Odrick. Sindarius Marks is another one. They could also, you know, potentially, you know, make a trade per se, you know, send a 7th for a veteran or something like that. You always leave the door open for something like that. But right now, you know, I think you're going to see a veteran signed. Not saying it's going to be Odrick, not even saying it's going to be Marks, but a veteran, low price veteran, and then also a draft pick. Now, whether it's a 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 1st, whatever, that's yet to be known. But I think you're going to see a free agent and a draft pick spent on that position as well. And you talked about defensive line depth. I think it's definitely a concern, especially now with the uncertainty with Oa. And looks like he's going to play, but we don't really know where his mind is. So definitely, adding defensive line depth is important. And if you look at last year's draft, the Giants had DRC and Janoris Jenkins. But what did they do? They took a corner with the top 10 pick. So definitely not, you know, don't be shocked if the Giants spend a first on a pass rush.
No, definitely. And honestly, it's a great draft for defensive line, especially edge rushers in the first round. So don't be shocked if that's the direction they decide to take. I'll throw a name out there. If you follow me on Twitter, you already know I'm in love with this guy. If Caleb Brantley is available in the second round, great 3-tech special for pass rushing that you could stick next to Hankins. But I don't want to get too in-depth. We have the NFL draft coming up later in the show. Next topic we have, however, the NFL schedule, supposed to be released tonight, but due to the wonders of social media, it was leaked this morning. So Weiss, let's go over the schedule. Likes, dislikes, do you have a prediction for the record? Maybe we can even go through it game by game, but I'll let you start and take it away.
On the schedule, you know, shock, shock for the Giants open up week one at Dallas.
Okay, so can we start there? Because honestly, it's pissing me off that we're opening again at Dallas.
I don't have that big of an issue with it, but I'll let you go ahead. I'll let you tell me why you hate it.
It's just, like, why can't we, even if it's Dallas, why can't it be in our home, all right? I know that Eli pretty much owns Jerry World, but it would be nice to be able to go to a season opener against the Cowboys at our home turf. And then, you know, week two against Lions, I don't have any problem with that. But, you know, back-to-back primetime games to open the season, that's fine. But away at the Cowboys, it's just annoying. You know, change it up at least a little bit. If you're not going to change up the team, at least give us, you know, the home field advantage.
I would rather play the Cowboys later in the season, just because bringing them outside, playing them in the cold, getting them away from Texas, and that beautiful stadium, and bringing them to the swamps of Jersey.
Yeah.
Where the wind blows, I think that would, you know...
Does that make Chris Christie the swamp monster?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It was actually funny because I was... A couple weeks ago, I was, you know, trying to, you know, talk to some people, see if I can get any, you know, any scoop on the schedule. And the first thing they told me was... maybe week one could be the Redskins hosting the Giants at 4:25.
Interesting.
That was going to be the premier game on Fox, but I guess not. It's a tough schedule, man. Looking at it, you're playing the NFC West and the AFC West. You know, divisions that, you know, can really, really exploit the Giants' weakness, which is their offensive line. So it's, you know, you look at it, you get at the Broncos, the Seahawks, the Raiders, the Chiefs. It is going to be tough. It's going to be a tough, tough test for the Giants. I'm excited that they got the Cowboys again. I can't say I'm surprised, just because Cowboys Giants always brings in the big money for the NFL.
Definitely
through the roof. So I can't blame them for putting that game in primetime. You know, week one. It's really not surprising. Week two, home opener, Monday night against the Lions. You know, like with you, I'm okay with that. Then week three, they got the Eagles, you know, at Philly, which is, I like that because it's not prime time.
Yeah.
Giants versus Eagles in Philly in prime time.
Nightmares.
Yes. at Tampa, it's a 4 o'clock game. I like that game. I like how they put that at 4 o'clock because I think these are two potential playoff teams. And if I were to put ranked teams right now, I think the Bucks and the Giants are both going to be in the playoffs. Chargers, then at the Broncos, that's going to be a tough one on Sunday night in Mile High. Then you follow that up with Seattle. It's going to be a tough test, but I think what I like about it, the one thing I do like about this schedule is three of the last four games are division games and at home.
Yep.
14 is the Cowboys. Week 15 is the Eagles. 16, they go to Arizona. But then week 17, they close first the Redskins at home. So I do like that a lot.
Let me say this.
Yes.
Last offseason, I made a prediction that was heavily criticized on Twitter. I said that the Dallas Cowboys were going to be a very good team. Now, I was correct for the wrong reasons, but I was still correct. And I want to make two, maybe three predictions right now. The one I made on Twitter earlier, Eli Manning is going to be bounce back year, top 10. Put it in the books right now. You heard it here first. That is my Eli prediction.
Hashtag angry Eli, right?
Hashtag angry Eli. The memorabilia revenge tour. That's what we're going to call this year for Eli. Again, you heard it here first. The memorabilia revenge tour. Number two, let's go back to the well for a second. Last year, I said the Cowboys were going to be very good. This year, the Cowboys are in for a regression, a full offseason to study Dak and Dak's tendencies. They lost. You can say that Doug Free had a bad year and he was old and washed. You lose Doug Free and you lose Ron Leary in one offseason. Continuity matters along the offensive line. So not to say that they won't be dominant and towards the top of the league, but maybe something to look out for. You can't
injuries do happen.
And injuries do happen.
Yep, they're not as strong on the offense.
You can run the ball all you want. I think that defense overperformed last year. I think they're in for regression. Spoiler alert, I'm choosing the Giants to win the division. I know, big shock. But let me get to my schedule take now. With the Cowboys' regression, the fact that Eli plays well at Jerry World, there is no reason, and I'm looking at this schedule, it's right in front of my face, especially given the fact that they have sort of a hard stretch with the AFC West. There's no reason the Giants should not start the season 5-0. 4-1 at the worst.
Wow.
The Lions shouldn't scare you. The Eagles definitely shouldn't scare you. I know divisional games, things get wonky, whatever. The Buccaneers, playoff team, maybe. This defense can exploit Jameis. I don't care what you tell me. Chargers, they're coming out east. Wonky with the time zones, you never know. Phillip Rivers, whatever, you know. I'm not really scared of that offensive line or that defense. They should start 5-0, 4-1 at the worst. That's my opinion.
Wow. Who's the one loss, if you were to say there's one loss?
The one loss.
At Tampa? You start
3-0? I would say either week one at the Cowboys. I know I just said they were in for regression, but maybe they're due because we swept them last year. And, yeah, probably at the Bucs. Those are the two that scare me the most out of the first five.
But the thing about the Cowboys is the Giants are built to beat the Cowboys.
Absolutely.
They have the defensive line, and even the linebackers, their strengths are playing the run. They are very good. You know, they can stop the Cowboys. I can flirt with your 5-0 starting out at 4-1. I can see them, okay, big win Sunday night against the Cowboys. You win the Monday night game against the Lions, and on a short week, you go to Philly, you win, you're 3-0. Then week four, you go at Tampa, second straight road game. You know, you're kind of riding high, but then, you know, Tampa, you know, could be looking for a must win early on, and they could get you. That is a 4 o'clock game. But yeah, I could see them starting. I mean, it's too early to say, obviously. But I could see 4-1. Definitely see 4-1. I could see 4-1.
Sure. By week 8, I like it. Not too early, not too late. Maybe get some people back starting week 9 if you suffer some injuries early on. That's always big. And then you come out against the Rams and the 49ers week 9 and 10.
You know what's funny about that?
Both bad teams.
Remember last year they had the bye, then they came out of the bye and they played...
In London.
They played London, then they had the bye. Then they came out of the bye, and then they played Cleveland and then Chicago, right?
Yep.
So they had two bad teams at post-bye. And then you look at here, they got the Rams and the 49ers, which is it's pretty interesting. I saw that. Then after that, they had that tough AFC game at the Steelers. In this case, they got it against the Chiefs. Am I thinking correctly or am I not?
I think you are. But I mean, looking at the schedule, it benefits them that, one, they play the Seahawks at home week 7 before the bye.
In the first half of the season. Remember, the Seahawks are his second half team.
Yep. Then they get the bye. Then they're at home against the Rams, go to the crappy 49ers. But then they're back at home. Back home against the Chiefs. So they get to face two tough AFC West opponents at home, which will benefit them.
Yeah. Then the Redskins on Thursday night.
Yep.
That's going to be an interesting one. You eat the turkey, then you're already, you know, you're going to be full, and then you got to sit and watch the Giants.
I mean, I don't know how you usually spend Thanksgiving, but we usually go over to a good family friend's house. They're Giants fans, so I honestly can't wait for Thanksgiving.
Well, I used to spend it here, actually close to where the Redskins practice in Nashville. Right. I had a family member here, we'd go there. But nowadays, the last couple of years, we've been coming to New York because I got family there. So probably going to be in New York. It's still to be determined. But, you know, if they're here, if I'm here for Thanksgiving, I will probably go to that game.
Yeah, and the dinner a bit early, head over there. Or maybe you tailgate with the turkey.
No, they go tailgate. You got to eat home, relaxed, you know. We'll see. But, you know, I have nothing wrong with me. Than playing on Thanksgiving at all.
Yeah, some people were complaining about it, but I like it.
Not at all. Tough game will be week 13 at the Raiders.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, right before.
And they have the 4:25 Fox game, too.
Yes.
NYG Weekly, episode 27. Ethan here. We got Robert Thomas, defensive tackle of the New York Giants, joining us today. He was gracious enough to give us 10 minutes of his time. Rob, how's everything going?
Everything's going well. Bless, my man. How's everything going your way?
Everything's great. Let's go back in time a little bit and talk about, you know, your upbringing and how you watched football. Who would you say your biggest football influence was growing up? It could be a player, it could be a coach, it could be a family member.
My biggest influence, like, I used to watch Florence Tapp. Like, I used to watch Florence Tapp like crazy, man. I wanted to do everything that I've seen Florence Tapp do. So I kind of try to mimic his game.
Very cool, yeah. So yeah, I guess you would say that's who you admire the most growing up?
Right, yes, sir.
Awesome. All right, let's go to the Giants. Your sixth team in three seasons. You've been, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you've been with the Redskins, the Seahawks, the Patriots, the Dolphins, and the Panthers. So now that you're with... All right, got it. And now that you're with the Giants, you got that one-year contract extension. What would you say is the most different thing about the Giants organization and the way they run things as opposed to the other teams that you've been with?
It's just really close-knit, man. It's like, it's bigger than, like, the actual organization. It's more like a family, you know? And, like, it's just, like you can tell that everyone is just bought in, like, from the coaching staff to the players to the people upstairs, the organization. Like, it's a beautiful thing.
Right. I mean, it seems pretty close-knit, and I remember, you know, going into last season where there were a lot of new additions to the defense, you know, yourself included, you know, the chemistry in the locker room between Odell's dancing and DRC's Facebook lives and all that stuff. You know, it seems like a really close knit group.
Yeah. I like it a lot because everyone is themselves. Like, there's no guys who feel like they're bigger than the team. Like, it's just one close knit family. Man. Like, everybody has fun, but on that field, I mean, it's work time. So, I mean, I really like that about our team organization.
Absolutely. So you signed a one-year deal this offseason. What does it mean for the Giants to not only believe in you, but give you the opportunity to start, you know, with Big Hank's departure?
It's a blessing. I thank them, you know what I'm saying, for the opportunity. So, you know, and again, I just feel like, I have to just put my part there. I tell you, go out there and take plays.
Definitely. So obviously, Big Hank's departure sort of paved the way for you to compete for the starting job on the defensive line. Before we get to you and your playing style, what do you think the team is going to miss most about Big Hank, both on and off the field?
He was definitely a character on and off the field. Man, he was a great guy off the field, had fun. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, on the field, he was a playmaker. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a good player. You know what I'm saying? Those are some true defensive.
For sure. And how much do you think you were able to learn from both Big Hank as well as Snacks last year in your first year with the Giants?
Those guys, as soon as I got there, like, they had open arms, and they would teach me from day one. So, like, it's not like most places that you go where people kind of like, I'm trying to fight for the same job, and they like trying to help you as much as they could, you know?
Definitely. I don't know if you've seen this, but, you know, on social media and through, you know, various blogs and news organizations, people say that Big Hank might not have been the best fit for the system that Steve Spagnuolo runs. So my question for you is, do you think you're a good fit? And do you think that you can complement Damon Harrison by adding more of a pass rushing influence to the interior part of the defensive line?
Most definitely. I kind of pride myself more on my pass rushes. That's my game. I feel like I really enjoy the pass rush. I can play the run. I'm good at the run, but I really enjoy pass rush. That's what my heart says.
That's awesome. So fans can hope to see some sacks this year.
Oh, yeah, most definitely that. Most definitely that.
All right, let's talk a little more general about the defense. Obviously, Landon Collins had a breakout season last year. He was unbelievable. If you had to pick one player on the defense outside yourself poised for that sort of breakout season, who would you pick?
For the breakout season, I'm gonna give it to Eli Apple.
All right.
He's pretty good. He's funny.
I love it. Yeah, that's my pick as well. I feel like, you know, second year defensive backs in Spag's system. Hopefully, Eli can continue the trend. Definitely. All right. One final serious question before we get to a couple fun ones that we can just rattle off. So obviously you were unavailable for the first five games last season due to an undisclosed illness. Are you able to tell us what happened, or would you rather not talk about it?
I'd really rather not talk about it. It was more in-house. It's only because keep it at that. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, absolutely. All right, let's get on to some of the more fun questions. Who do you think is the funniest person on the entire team, and then specifically the defense?
hands down TRC, like the most funniest guy I've ever met in my life.
Based on his Snapchat, I would have to agree with you.
I'm talking about team, defense, offense, doesn't matter. The most funniest person. Maybe I feel like if he wasn't playing football, he should definitely be a comedian.
Stand-up comedian. Have you seen his Snapchats where he dresses up in the Spider-Man? Not Spider-Man, the Power Rangers outfit?
Yeah. Holy cow, yeah. Man. Everybody was showing it after we got back. It was hilarious.
He's crazy. He's hilarious. All right. There was a little spat on Twitter today. I don't know if you saw it, between Orleans Darkwa and Eli Apple, between who is the best 2K player in the locker room. Is it you? Is it you?
I feel like I'm definitely top five.
Okay.
But I feel like Shaq's probably going to the top. Like, if not the top, straight, sir. Yeah, he might be the top.
Fantastic. All right. Is there anything Odell won't dance to?
I definitely believe that, man. Any song that you put on, he has to dance for. I don't care what it is. It could be a song with nothing on it. No beat, no anything. People have
to
dance for it,
though. I love it. All right, final question before we let you go. You go to McDonald's, you pull into the drive-thru. What's your go-to order?
Oh, go-to order at McDonald's would have to be. I'm going to go back in time, like my college days. It had to be 3 double cheeseburgers.
Okay.
No onions, large fries, and a 10-piece nugget.
And the 10-piece nugget.
And the 10-piece.
What's the go-to sauce for the nuggets?
Gotta be the barbecue.
It's gotta be the barbecue. It's gotta be.
Yeah.
All right, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to hop on the podcast with us. We really enjoyed it. Good luck this offseason, going into next season. We hope to speak to you again soon.
All right, appreciate that, man. Y'all take care.
You too. All right, talk schedule. Let's do a little NFL draft. You got a few notes written down here. Prospects we like, we don't like. You want to talk quarterback round one. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with prospects we like and we don't like. Tell me 3 that you like and tell me 3 you don't like.
3 that I like.
Yes.
I love Forrest Lamp. I love Lamp. Yes, you heard that correctly. I love Lamp. Listen, if the Giants decide to go offensive line, which we have no idea to know if they are or they are not, none of the projected first-round tackles entices me. And people, anonymous scouts, because it's anonymous scout season, obviously, have said that this might be the worst tackle class or first-round tackle class that they've seen in 15-plus years. And you know what? People are in love with Garrett Bowles. He's got 1 year full starting experience, and he's 25. I don't like that. Ryan Ramczyk, one full year of starting experience, and he's coming off of hip labrum surgery. Cam Robinson, maybe. People say that he's got plenty of flaws, and we've seen Ereck Flowers struggle over the last year or two. If you're going to go offensive line, I'd rather you take someone who's, and it's, you never know, but who's more of a sure thing. Someone, and we've seen plenty of college tackles make the transition to guard. You know, we can even look within the division and look at Zach Martin. Not to say that he's going to be Zach Martin. We can look at our own team, Justin Pugh. He made the transition, and he's been very, very good for the Giants. If you can get a day one starter along the offensive line and someone who projects to be there for a long time, you could have a middle offensive line of Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg, and Forrest Lamp. I love that. So throw Forrest Lamp on the list of prospects that I love. Number 2, Charles Harris, out of Missouri, defensive end. I love him. Edge specialist. The way he bends around the tackle, it's mesmerizing, honestly. You may see him in a mock draft. Who knows? From me, coming in the next few days. I really love Charles Harris if they're going to go defensive end. And, you know, obviously the top few are off the board. I think he is a realistic possibility. My 3rd... and there's no way to know if either of these guys will be available, because with the chatter you're hearing, I feel like both are going to go top 15, but you never know because it's a defensive back heavy draft. Either OJ Howard or David Njoku. You know, OJ Howard, the most complete tight end in the draft. David Njoku, very good pass catcher with Jordan Reed like upside. So those are probably the top 3 that I like.
Okay. top three. You do the top three. Like, I'll do the top three we don't like, and then you'll tell me the top three we don't like.
Okay.
Right off the bat, I am not a Ryan Ramsey fan.
Okay.
I just think there's just so many question marks with the he has the injury, and then on top of that, it's not really a when I say off the field, I don't mean in terms of like he's got in trouble, but there were talks about him quitting football. And that's a huge red flag for me when you talk about commitment to playing.
Right.
So you got a red flag with injuries and a red flag with, you know, with off the field stuff. And then on top of that, I mean, there's just he's only played like what, a year of football or something like that. So, you know, I just really don't like him at 23. I know a lot of people do, but you know, judging by some of the stuff I've read, it doesn't seem like he's on the Giants. The Giants are that high on him, but I'm praying that he's not the pick. Second one for me is probably Jabril Peppers. I don't understand the love affair with
me neither.
That is probably can't play linebacker at the pro level, probably can't play safety at the pro level, but could be a kick returner or a punt returner.
Right.
I think it's because Peppers is from the Jersey area. That's why people love him so much. But I am not a fan of Jabril Peppers. I don't think the Giants will take him, you know, just because this type of stuff that they like, and Peppers doesn't match that. And also the fact that they don't really need a safety, and linebacker's just a – he doesn't fit what they're looking for at linebacker, so I'm not even going to be worried about that. And the third – and this was kind of tough for me, but the third guy for me is Gerard Davis from Florida. But I'm not going to say I hate him. There's not a lot of prospects that I hate. The one thing I will say about Gerard Davis is I think he is very athletic. I think he has what, quote-unquote, incredible intangibles, as they say. But I'm just really worried about his medical. I could see this potentially being a case where, you know, he comes in and when he's on the field, he's great and we love him, but he's just often hurt. So I'm really scared. Who I dislike and one I'm just totally scared of, and that's Gerard Davis. Since I told you one that I'm scared of, the third that I really, really don't like at all, and I don't understand the love affair with him, is a guy you mentioned, and that's Forrest Lamb. Forrest Lamb played at a small school. And thank God, because it doesn't look like he's going to be the pick for the Giants. He played at a small school. Really, there's no natural position for him. Some say he's a guard. Some say he's a center. Some say he's a tackle. You know, when Pugh was drafted, Pugh was scheduled to play right tackle for us. Then he got, you know, then they changed him to guard. I don't really think Lamb can come in and kind of do that. I know that I see the comparison. I know why people are comparing, but I'm just not a Lamb fan like that. He's just not someone that I would want the Giants using 23rd pick on. But that's just my opinion. I'm sorry. I'm not a fan. I'm not on the Forrest Lamb bandwagon.
Well, that's fine. I'm not going to try to change your mind.
No matter what, you are pro football focused, throw in my face.
All right, now what am I doing? I'm doing players I don't like?
Yeah, three that you don't like.
All right, number one on my list, Garrett Bowles. Much like your dislike for Ryan Ramczyk, he's 25, 1 year. You just don't know what you're going to get out of him. I know you can give him some time to develop, but I just don't see the upside with him. People say he's a physical freak. That's awesome. But if he's going to be the one competing with Ereck Flowers and we're not certain that he's going to be able to beat out Ereck Flowers right away, then there's no point in taking him, especially... You know, with pretty much same goes for all these tackles. You know, if you even have a doubt that they're going to come in and they might struggle or they might not beat out someone like Ereck Flowers for the job, I get you can draft them and try to develop them. But, you know, people say, all right, they're not just drafting for the present, they're drafting for the future. And that's true. But the first round pick needs to make some sort of immediate impact. And Eli Apple, despite the fact that DRC and Jenkins were here last season, Eli Apple still got a lot of snaps in three cornerback sets. So, you know, if it's going to be a tackle, it needs to be someone that we know is going to be able to beat out Ereck Flowers. So I'll throw him number one. Number two, Zach Cunningham. Not that I dislike him. I just don't see the hype with him. He doesn't seem to be that athletic. And to be quite honest, with the defensive line and the run defense that the Giants have down there, I don't see linebacker as a huge necessity at the moment. If you want to draft a linebacker, maybe someone like Hassan Reddick, who has pass rush ability, that's awesome. But Cunningham doesn't impress me. Third, I'm going to group all of the running backs together. I do not want a running back in the first round. Wow. Yes, that includes Christian McCaffrey, Weiss. I know you finished off number three by doing Forrest Lamp, so I'm throwing Christian McCaffrey in my dislike column. And last year was the prime example of why you don't take a running back in the first round, because the Cowboys took Ezekiel Elliott, and behind that line, guess what? He was phenomenal. You know who was just as good, if not better, behind an atrocious offensive line with zero help at the quarterback position? Jordan Howard, who was drafted in the fourth round. So you can find that value later in the draft, and if the Giants pick a running back in the first round, I promise you I will lose my mind.
Wow.
What? I got passionate there.
You throw a lot at me right there. I'll give you your Zach Cunningham, although I think you're being a little bit rough on Zach. I think he can be a sideline to sideline guy. I know he's tackling as a question mark, but listen, linebacker's a need. They only have one linebacker under contract in 2018. That's B.J. Goodson. So linebacker's definitely a need if you can get the right one. Three I love. Now listen, we both love O.J. Howard, right?
Yeah.
We don't need to discuss that, right? We don't have to waste some time on him. We both love the guys like Garrett and Allen, and we love those top 10 projected guys, right? We would do jumping jacks with them.
Absolutely.
Right? You just said you don't like drafting running back in round one. For the record, if Leonard Fournette is there, you don't want them drafting Leonard Fournette either?
No.
I love Christian McCaffrey. I think Christian McCaffrey is not only, if he's available at 23, the Giants should do jumping jacks and should do the Ric Flair swag walk to the podium. I mean, this would be a perfect pick for the Giants. I love Christian McCaffrey. Anything he brings, what he brings to his offense is exactly what we need. We need an offensive weapon. You know, he would be so easily the best choice for the Giants at 23, unless O.J. Howard is there. Just the way he runs, just the way he can line him up as a receiver. He's so versatile. He is a clean prospect. I would love Christian McCaffrey if he's there at 23. Second, I am a big, big fan of Garrett Bowles. And you're not, but that's interesting. I like Garrett Bowles. I think he's the best left tackle in the draft. If he's there at 23, I would definitely consider him, although I don't think he's going to be there at 23. I think there's a good chance he goes in the top 15. But Bowles, I believe, can come in and be a day one left tackle starter. He is very, very athletic. He's a mauler. His attitude kind of reminds me of Weston Richburg. Would love him there. I know the age is a concern, but listen, if you get 10 years out of Garrett Bowles, that's considered a great, great win. So I am a fan of Garrett Bowles, and that's one guy I won't mind at all. The third and is Charles Harris from Missouri.
Jesus Christ, Weiss. We cannot be more opposite right now.
You don't like Charles Harris?
Oh, sorry. I forgot you were doing your likes. I love Charles Harris.
Yeah, I love Charles Harris. See, that's the guy for me. That's the OC in the equation.
Sure.
Him coming in, being the OC manure for us, I would love that. I also love Hassan Reddick, but so do you. But we kind of agree that he's going to go in the top 15, right?
Yep.
Right. I'm a big Charles Harris fan. I think he could be in play for the Giants at number 23. Hopefully he's not gone before then, but I am a big Charles Harris fan. I was a fan, or I still am a fan of Malik McDowell, but there's just a lot of question marks about him right now, and sort of like Gerard Davis with the injury. McDowell's off-the-field stuff kind of scares me. I do like quarterbacks. I do like Deshaun Watson a lot, and we'll talk about drafting a quarterback in the first round, but I think he should be in the conversation if he's available at 23 as well. So those are my three likes. I get asked a lot about Cam Robinson. I think it is an absolute crime for people to compare Cam Robinson to Ereck Flowers. Cam Robinson is a much better tackle than Ereck Flowers. I'm not saying Cam Robinson is going to be a great left tackle. I think he's more fitted to play right tackle, but if the Giants draft Cam Robinson at 23, I don't want people being angry just because NFL.com compares him to Ereck Flowers. He is better than Ereck Flowers. So let's just get it out of the way. I watched his tape against Myles Garrett. I saw a lot of good things from him. He also has some off-the-field stuff and issues with the stance, but that's not really a big technique thing. That's an easy fix. Flowers is just a raw talent that, you know, has completely been blocked. But Cam Robinson can play and could be a day one starter. So, yeah.
All right. So we disagree on a lot. That's fine. That's typically how it goes.
But I'm so surprised that I thought you'd change your tone about Christian McCaffrey.
Not at all.
After the last time we spoke.
It's not a talent thing. He's very talented. It's a value thing. You can get that value later in the draft. You absolutely can.
So let me ask you a question. Honestly, you're going to be upset if the Giants draft Christian McCaffrey?
Yes.
What would you do if they trade up for him?
They're not. There's no way.
I don't know. I like Christian McCaffrey. I think you know, McCaffrey's kind of be like, you know, that last year how you were with Paul Perkins, everyone was so high on him.
Yeah.
And you were like, guys, relax. You know, Jerry Reese is not known for finding guys like this, but now you love him more than anybody.
My issue with Paul Perkins was we need to pump the brakes because Jerry Reese later in the draft has proven to not be that great of a drafter last year.
You kind of like pump the brakes on him. In this case, then you're going to be out. You're going to be angry about it. But a year from now, you'll probably love Christian McCaffrey more than anyone.
No, because you're going to look later in the draft and say, oh, the Indianapolis Colts drafted so-and-so in the fourth round, and he has the same amount of production as Christian McCaffrey.
I don't know. I think McCaffrey brings up the table.
All right. I think that's it. Let's see. Do we have any questions before we go?
Okay, I got a question for you.
Okay.
What is your problem with the Giants drafting a quarterback at 23?
My problem is I just don't think any of them are that talented. Every one of them has their issue. And let's be honest, one of them might be available when the Giants pick. The others, Trubisky and Watson are going top 15. Okay, they are. They just are. Someone like Mahomes, you just don't spend a first-round pick on him. Someone who's raw like that, he makes the video game throws. But to be honest, and listen, you're going to have him sit 3 years behind Eli. I think you can wait a year, especially with the lack of talent in this draft. Someone like Kizer in the first round, no thank you.
I like Deshaun Kizer a lot. Would I use a first-round pick on him? Probably not. Would I trade up for him in round two? Maybe, if the price is right. I like Deshaun Watson. I don't really like much Trubisky. I think he's just there's just something about Trubisky I don't really like. But I have no problem with the Giants drafting either of those two at 23. I don't like Mahomes. Definitely don't like Davis Webb. I have no problem with that. Here's the thing. I'll make the same about the Giants drafting a quarterback, okay? In any of the rounds. If the Giants don't draft a quarterback in the first three rounds, four rounds, five rounds, whatever, it won't be because they just don't want to draft a quarterback.
The value isn't there.
The value isn't there, exactly. Because they did their homework on these quarterbacks.
Absolutely. Right? Jerry Reese even said today he's done more research on quarterbacks than any other year.
Bingo. You listened to that press conference, didn't
you?
Listen, Jerry went to North Carolina, right, for Trubisky.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Ross was at Clemson, along with some other Giant scouts. Offensive coordinator Mike Sullivan was at Notre Dame with Deshaun Kizer. Ben McAdoo was at Texas Tech for Mahomes. They did their homework. So if there's someone they like and it brings value in the second round, third round, even the first round, I have no problem with them pulling the trigger. But I don't disagree with people that say, well, you know, that they don't like you don't like any of the quarterbacks. I'm not going to argue with that with you. Everyone has the right to their opinion. But if your reason is, oh, let's wait till next year, or let's, you know, we need to win now with Eli, I think that's wrong. I don't think you go into the draft thinking, I need to get players that can help me day one. You draft for the future. And so if there's a quarterback there that you like, whether it's in round one or two or whatever, that you think can potentially be the guy, or be the guy after Eli Manning, you pull the trigger. You know, you don't need to wait. You know? So that's just my opinion on it.
Here's my issue with it, and it's not an issue of whether or not it's building for the future, because you can draft players that both fit the, you know, win now as well as development mode. None of these quarterbacks are going to step in and, you know, okay, let's say this. Knock on wood, God forbid, Eli gets injured and the Giants took someone in the first round before that. But Eli goes into camp, takes a bad hit, whatever. This quarterback comes in. Giants season is over. They're not winning the Super Bowl with any of these rookies. I said it earlier. If you're taking someone in round one, there needs to be an immediate impact. And I don't think any of these quarterbacks even has the long-term value enough to warrant using that pick.
Not even Watson.
Not even Watson.
Okay. Hey,
if someone's available in the second or third, and even someone like Nathan Peterman out of Pitt is available later in the draft, I have no issue with the Giants taking a flyer on one of these guys and trying to develop them. I have no issue with it. I really don't. There are so many more important positions that need to be addressed in the first round. And I know people say, oh, it's value, it's best player available. But if you're telling me someone like Charles Harris is available and let's say Trubisky is available, that you can, you know, rationalize taking someone like Trubisky over someone like Charles Harris who can make an immediate impact. Even someone like, I'll even throw Watson in there. In my opinion, you can't, because someone like Harris is going to make an immediate impact at a position where you need depth. So, you know, in my opinion, there are plenty of more high value options the Giants would have, even if one of those two quarterbacks was available.
Yeah, listen, everyone's opinion about the draft is their opinion. We share it, we discuss it, that's what makes it fun. And if you think that, you know, these quarterbacks don't have that value, then, hey, I'm not gonna, it's your opinion, man, that you're entitled to it. With me, I like Deshaun Watson a lot. I think he's the best quarterback in the draft, although Deshaun Kizer is up there with him. I think Kizer's more of a guy that will need a little bit more development, but he's got the intangibles. One guy that's been growing on me a little bit is Josh Dobbs. Now, I'm not saying they should take him in the first round or the second round, but he's one of those later round quarterbacks that the Giants could get that could give them some value and give them some glimpse of him potentially being someone that they could look to post Eli Manning. But let me ask you a question. Training up in this draft, let's say a guy like O.J. Howard, who I think you can tell the Giants really, really like.
This was actually one of the few questions we got for this episode was, at what position would O.J. Howard need to be available for you to trade up to get him?
Okay, for me to trade up, I think probably 15.
I was about to say the exact same thing.
15 or down. I think it'll just cost too much to go higher than 15.
Yep, I agree.
It just costs too much. If he's like 16, 17, maybe you can do a first, a third, and then maybe a sixth next year.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But I think one thing I can tell, and maybe you can tell too, is that I think the Giants really, really like O.J. Howard. And the separation on their board from O.J. Howard to the rest of the tight ends is a lot.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I know Njoku is, a lot of people like Njoku and they consider him a first-round talent. And he is. But on the Giants draft board, I think that the separation between O.J. Howard and the next tight end is much larger than anyone else expects. I could see it, you know, 16, 17, you know, O.J. Howard's still there. I could definitely see them try to be aggressive and move up. Now, there could be a team that likes O.J. Howard just as much as the Giants do, that kind of try to get as much as they can out of him. But, you know, I think it'll be 15 or 16. 15 or down is when I could see them grabbing or picking up the phone and trying to move up.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let's talk quarterback again real quick, because I just want to throw this out there. You look around the league, and there are so many teams that are just stuck in QB purgatory. They can never find the right guy. They miss on this draft pick. This reclamation project didn't work out. The Giants are very blessed to have Eli Manning and have him for as long as we have. We're blessed for that. No one's going to disagree. And not miss a game.
Right.
Now, what I don't have an issue with, right? So you bring in Geno on the one-year deal just to see what you can do with him. Safe to say that Josh Johnson, you know, he's on the fringe when it comes to making the roster or not. So let's just say the Giants go into the season. It's Eli Manning, Geno. I have no issue with them taking a later round pick just to see if it works out. I mean, the Cowboys did it with Dak and it worked out. The Seahawks did it with Russell Wilson and it worked out. You know, and with these teams, like, I don't know, let's say the Jets, right? It seems like every year they go into the draft and they don't have a quarterback. You're not going to win in this league without a quarterback. So for me, you know, why don't you just take the best guy available in the first, take the best guy available in the third, take the best guy available in the fifth, whatever, until you find a guy, because you're not going to win unless you find a guy. I have no issue with the Giants sort of taking a flyer on some of these late round guys. Maybe draft two, maybe use a fourth and a sixth on quarterbacks that are available, because you never know what you're going to get. And maybe one of these guys sticks, maybe they don't, and next year there's another guy available. If you're going to look for Eli's successor, from what we've seen over the past few years of the NFL, it's very hard to draft a quarterback and draft one that's going to make an immediate impact. So might as well just throw a bunch of shit at the wall and see what sticks.
Well, this is where you have to believe in your evaluating. You have to believe in your scouting department and your draft board. If there's a quarterback that you value, whether it's in the first round or the second round or the third round or the fourth round or so on and so forth, and he's available about where you value him, then you take him. But this notion that, you know, and I think some teams do this, is they go into the draft, right, and they'll say, well, we need to take, and I think the Giants do this when it comes to safety, is we need to draft a quarterback. You know, not necessarily in the first two rounds or three rounds. We need to take a quarterback. I think you saw Bill Belichick do it with Jacoby Brissett when he had Jimmy Garoppolo and Tom Brady, obviously. You see the Jets kind of doing it, sort of. You saw the Raiders do it with Connor Cook. They had David Carr, but they took Connor Cook.
Yep.
It's all about believing your draft board, but believing in your evaluation. Another one I'll say is A.J. McCarron when they had Andy Dalton. But, you know, in the situation where the Giants are in, you know, it is a weak class of quarterbacks, and it's definitely, you know, to say that there's no chance of them finding a successful Eli Manning in this draft at all is kind of, you know, going a little overboard. But they have to believe in their evaluating. They have to understand. They have to trust their board and take a guy. And this not just pertains to quarterback, it pertains to any pick. Draft him if he's the highest guy on the board. So if it's a quarterback, I mean, I'm with you. You know, there's a guy in the later rounds that brings value, Gerard Evans from Virginia Tech,
yep.
Pierman from, you know, Pittsburgh, Josh Dobbs from Tennessee. You know, if there's a guy you like, take him. You know, Deshaun Kizer in the second round, hey, you know, he's the highest guy on our board. Look, we're going to take him with our second-round pick. Then you take him. But the most important thing with this is when you draft these young quarterbacks, developing them is going to be very important. You know, I feel like the Giants kind of gave up on Nassib, because from what I understood is Nassib, they were high on Nassib when they traded up for him. But Kevin Gilbride was a big Ryan Nassib fan. And if you remember when they drafted Ryan Nassib, Kevin Gilbride was the offensive coordinator.
Yep.
That, you know, Gilbride goes out, then McAdoo comes in. McAdoo's opinion on Nassib might be different. So I'm not saying that, you know, that's the reason why Nassib, you know, never is not still with the team. But you have to, developing is just as important as ranking them on your draft board. So it's going to be important for McAdoo, if he does draft a quarterback in any of these rounds, how he develops and how much attention has development garners, not just from the head coach, but from the coaches as well. So, you know, the Giants are in a good spot with Eli Manning. They have a quarterback that can still play at a high level, but they have to start thinking about these things, and they have to, you know, understand, and I think they are, that, you know, Eli's time is coming down. We're at the stretch run for Eli. So, you know, build a solid team around him like they have, but understand that, you know, we need to start looking for the replacement.
Definitely. All right. Any final words before we end this episode?
Questions?
We only got a few. I think we answered a couple of them throughout the course of the episode. So I think that's about it.
This was a good episode.
It was.
You know, the draft gets closer. We're gonna be doing another one next week too, right?
Yeah, we are, with special guests.
Another special guest.
All right, let's wrap it up then. Guys, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed.
Before you go.
Yeah.
We're a week away from the draft. Based on everything you read and everyone you talked to, who do you think, now who you want, who do you think the Giants pick is going to be at 23 right now?
Wow, who do I think? This is tough. Can you go first?
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
I believe the Giants will take Zach Cunningham. I think Bowles is going to be gone. I think the linebacker from Florida is going to be gone. And I think Zach Cunningham will be the pick for the Giants at 23.
Okay, I could see that. Would sort of go against previous Jerry draft strategy, but they have shown interest. Someone was down there at Vandy, right, at their pro day?
Jerry was down there.
Yeah, Jerry was down there. Okay. Oh, wow. Putting me on the spot here. I have no idea if...
It's such a bizarre draft, right?
It really is, because, and you know what? Unlike last year, where Jerry really zoned in on like two or three guys, and you sort of knew who he really liked between Conklin and Leonard Floyd. There's really no one where you can be like, wow, Jerry really likes this guy. So it's kind of a crapshoot for me. You know what? I'm going to say OJ. A miracle happens and OJ falls.
They're going to have to trade up. There's no way he's coming to 20.
You know, you put me on the spot and I really have no idea, so I just said OJ.
OJ Howard. Hey, listen, if they draft OJ Howard...
I'm doing backflips.
Yeah, even if they have to trade up...
Yeah.
That offense...
would be next level. Bond.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. All right. Guys, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the Robert Thomas interview. Go follow him on Twitter. Go follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast. Thank you guys for listening, and we will speak to you for some draft talk next week.
Peace.